Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On May 24th, 2021, the Supreme Court decided United States v. Palomar-Santiago. The issue is whether a defendant who is removed from the United States is automatically entitled to a defense of invalid removal where the crime underlying his removal is no longer a qualifying removal offense within his circuit. In a 9-0 opinion authored by Justice Sotomayor, the Supreme Court reversed the ruling of the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case. The Supreme Court held, quote, each of Section 1326D's statutory requirements for bringing a collateral attack on a prior deportation order is mandatory, end quote. Brian Fish, Special Assistant to the United States Attorney in Baltimore, Maryland, joins us today to discuss this decision and its implications.
Hello, Federalists. My name is Brian Fish, and I've been asked to talk for a few minutes today about the United States Supreme Court decision in U.S. versus Palomar-Santiago. This case is what's now becoming a bit of a long line of cases in what I refer to as the world of crimmigration. Crimmigration is sort of the Venn diagram meeting point for criminal law, immigration law, and administrative law. And this case is also yet another in the Supreme Court's long line of cases that come to us from the Ninth Circuit, where the Ninth Circuit simply means 9-0 reversal. And I've been trying to think of a good analogy and a good starting off point for this discussion. And watching the Stanley Cup playoff hockey, it just sort of hit me like a puck upside the head. This case is the judicial equivalent of Wayne Gretzky on a breakaway scoring on an empty net. Not only is your team losing, losing badly, losing late, but your defense screws up, turns the puck over, and the greatest hockey player in history scores an empty net on you. You just look silly. And the court's decision today in Palomar is just that. It's making the Ninth Circuit look silly. So with that as a starting off point, let's talk a little bit about the facts of the case, the legal timeline of the case, and then we'll give you some implications, what I think this case hopefully means going forward. So, facts of the case. The defendant, Palomar, is an LPR, a lawful permanent resident, or as most people simply call it, he has a green card. He gets convicted in California state court of something called driving under the influence with injury, meaning he's drunk driving, causes an accident which causes injury to another person. Again, he's convicted of that. And importantly, at the time of his state court conviction, that conviction made him removable from the country. So in other words, if the United States government files a notice to appear against him in immigration court, he would be removable. In other words, he would lose his green card and he would be removed physically from the United States. And that's just what happened. The United States government filed the immigration charging document called the notice to appear. He appeared in immigration court. He admitted the allegations on the NTA, conceded the charge, and did not have any relief from removal. So he was then removed the next day to his home country of Mexico. Years later, the Supreme Court said that the conviction in that case is not, in fact, a removable offense. Years after that, Palomar is found once again in the United States and is charged criminally under Title 8, United States Code, Section 1326 of Reentry After Previous Removal. A 1326 conviction is a felony. First offense max is 2 years, second offense 10 years, third and subsequent offenses are 20 years. He's put into, well, he's, again, he's charged, indicted. He files in district court a motion to dismiss, which is granted by the district court. The government appeals to the Ninth Circuit, and the dismissal is upheld. The government then files cert to the United States Supreme Court, which gets us here today. Now, I'm a member of the Society's Criminal Law Practice Group Executive Committee, and I did a teleforum on the courthouse steps, if you will, telephonically, since we're still in the pandemic, of the oral arguments for this case. This time, I've been asked by the faculty division to do sort of a summary, if you will, of the decision. And so, with the backdrop of this is a faculty division case, while listening to oral arguments, the defendant came up with the idea that it's hornbook law. And I stopped right there. I hadn't heard the term hornbook since law school. So I jotted down exactly what Palomar's attorney was talking about. And what he says is that the statute meant the same thing before and after a decision by a court which invalidates said statute. Therefore, the removal of Palomar all those years ago was invalid. And again, hornbook law, folks. And what the defense counsel was trying to say is that because Palomar was removed on the basis of a criminal conviction, which is no longer a removable offense, the actual removal order is therefore invalid. That's essentially the defense. And the Ninth Circuit takes it one step farther in how they analyze 1326 prosecutions. So here's the legal timeline for the case that brings us to today. In the United States Code, again, Section Title 8, Section 1326, it is a crime to enter the country. Well, 1325, it makes it a crime to enter the country without permission. It is a misdemeanor subject to a maximum of 6 months. A 1326 offense, which is, again, reentry after previous removal, is a felony. In 1987, the United States Supreme Court in U.S. versus Mendoza-Lopez essentially said, look, you got to give the defendants an avenue to fight this removal in court, not just an administrative court through the Executive Office of Immigration Review, which is Immigration Court, and the Appellate Unit, the Board of Immigration Appeals. You have to give defendants a judicial avenue. Fine. So, and that decision, again, Mendoza-Lopez, was codified under 1326D. 1326D gives us three things that a defendant has to show in order to get his case before the judicial body. And first of all, he has to show that he has exhausted all administrative procedures. Number two, he has to show that the removal proceedings that he went through deprived him of judicial review, and this, that's the key word to all of this, and that his removal proceedings were fundamentally unfair. Next, we have United States versus Trinidad Aquino, which is a Ninth Circuit decision in 2001 that says driving under the influence with injury is not an aggravated felony making a criminal defendant removable. And then, and most importantly, the Ninth Circuit in a case called U.S. versus Ochoa in 2017 said a defendant doesn't have to show number one and number two. He only has to show that his removal proceedings were fundamentally unfair. Again, that the defendant doesn't have to show that he has exhausted all administrative procedures and remedies, and he doesn't have to show that the removal proceedings deprived him of judicial review. He only has to show that the removal proceedings that caused the basis for the prior removal under 1326 were fundamentally unfair. The Ninth Circuit is the only circuit to say such thing. And here's the circuit split on cases of similar nature that have come up to the different circuits. It's the Ninth versus the First, the Fifth, the Sixth, the Seventh, the Eighth, the Tenth, and Eleventh. Absolutely no one outside of the Ninth Circuit has the same opinion that you can basically skip the first two steps of what the Supreme Court said in Mendoza-Lopez, which was codified by Congress and put into 1326D. Nobody else agrees with the Ninth Circuit's interpretation that we can basically skip the first two steps of congressionally mandated law. But it's the Nutty Ninth. So that gets us to the decision. This is a 9-0 empty net goal by, of all people, writing for the majority, Justice Sotomayor. And I stopped there and really want to emphasize that Sotomayor is not necessarily known for her adherence to statutory black letter interpretations of the law. Let's face it, she looks for other things before she generally looks for what does the law say. But this is such an easy case, even Justice Sotomayor, and I quote, says, the Ninth Circuit's interpretation is incompatible with the text of 1326D. And I think that's an important line that hopefully going forward on cases, whether they're crimmigration cases, immigration cases, criminal cases, or any other kind of case, if there's a statute that's clear as the day is long, black letter law, another term from law school days, should prevail. Because if it's easily read, we don't have to interpret anything. We can just apply the law to the facts, make a decision, and move along. If Justice Sotomayor can use what she said in this case going forward in all kinds of cases, I think this case, in a relatively niche decision, and again, the Venn diagram of crimmigration law, this case can be used every time an advocate comes before the court with this kind of black letter law case and say, Your Honors, and specifically you, Justice Sotomayor, This case shouldn't be here. This case should be have been decided at the district court level on nothing but what the law says. And if we can hold the court and all nine members of the court to that idea, I think we've really got something, especially as Federalists who want the rule of law, who want the courts, especially the Supreme Court, especially the Ninth Circuit, and especially the court you're arguing your case in front of, to say what the law is, apply the law, and go on to the next case. So what does this decision do immediately? Well, the case itself is for crimmigration practitioners everywhere, stands for the proposition that, hey, you got to file your motion to reopen the immigration proceedings with the Office of the Executive Office of Immigration Review, EOIR, which is a part of the Justice Department that houses the immigration courts, if it's still at the trial court level, or at the Board of Immigration Appeals, if it had been there. You have to follow procedures that are written out. You don't get to skip steps, which should be an easy thing to grasp for those of us outside of the Ninth Circuit. For those of you who live in the Ninth Circuit and practice there, I'm sorry. But at least you folks have this case that you can wave in front of your trial courts, the Ninth Circuit, and everybody else out there and say, look, here it is. Here's the law. This is what it says. It's not difficult. You don't need to interpret it. You don't need to find the penumbras and the between the lines. It's very clear what the law is. Can we just make the rational decision and move along? Again, hopefully that's what this case stands for. We'll see going forward. But again, what it means to crimmigration practitioners is you have to file your motion to reopen the prior immigration court proceedings, go through that process at the immigration court level, at the BIA level. If you lose there, then you get to file your petition for review at the circuit court, and then, and only then, do you get to start a true court case, but you have to go through those procedures first. Then and only then do you get to file your suit in United States District Court, and then you will have your judicial remedies. You don't get to skip two steps of Supreme Court telling you what you need to do, and that case being codified by Congress. You don't get to just skip steps. So that's what this court case is about. That's the procedures that you have to follow. I think another implication is in a lot of these crimmigration cases we've had over the last couple of years, we've had two amicus entities filing briefs. And what I'm hoping for as a practitioner in this area, that this case will really slap not only the Ninth Circuit, but these two groups from just filing silly, silly, silly briefs. The two groups being the National Association of Federal Defenders. They're not per se a silly group, but every time that they have filed an immigration-related brief, they don't really know what they're talking about. They rely too heavy on criminal interpretations and criminal law mechanisms, and they don't understand the administrative immigration law, and they just kind of look silly. even more so than the Federal Public Defenders Group, is the National Immigration Project. These folks are essentially retired immigration court and BIA judges who, every time one of these immigration cases comes up to the court, files a brief in support of the alien. So they have removed their robes, and you can see their legal and ideological backing, and you wonder what they were like on the bench. But now we see them in full color, and they are not, I repeat, not independent-minded folks. They side with the alien every single time, backing up the old adage that it's never really over until the alien wins. Well, this time, the alien didn't win. He at least has to go through the same hurdles as everybody else. So again, that's United States versus Palomar Santiago. Wayne Gretzky, as embodied by Justice Sotomayor, puts the puck in the back of the net, 9-0, and the Ninth Circuit hopefully, but unlikely, but hopefully has learned his lesson that you actually need to follow the law. Again, thanks for listening, Federalists. This is Brian Fish. Until next time, we'll see you in the land of crimmigration.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.